Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're continuing our focus on the California Supplemental Exam, zeroing in on some more sample questions.
That's right. We've got the webinar notes, the KS list, the AIA prep doc, and we're really going to dissect the thinking behind answering these last few questions correctly.
Exactly. It's about understanding the why, not just the what. So let's jump straight into question three. I'll read it out exactly. You are an architect planning a new public community center in California. The center is funded by the state and aims to serve a diverse local community. In compliance with California's anti-discrimination laws, how should you approach the design of this community center to ensure it provides equal access and does not discriminate against any group based on race, national origin, ethnic group identification, religion, age, sex, sexual orientation, color, genetic information, or disability?
Okay, quite a mouthful, but the key things that jump out are public community center, California, definitely state-funded, and diverse local community.
Right, and the core instruction. Comply with California's anti-discrimination laws. Ensure equal access and not discriminate based on that long list.
Precisely. So keeping those keywords in mind, let's look at the options.
Option A is designing the center with features catering exclusively to a specific religious group.
Well, right away, that word exclusively clashes directly with diverse community and non-discrimination.
Yeah, state-funded public facility. You just can't do that. It goes against the whole principle of equal access mentioned in the anti-discrimination laws.
Exactly. Think about the schematic design and discretionary approvals. Part of the exam content, understanding these fundamental legal requirements, is key. So A is out. Definitely.
Okay. Option B. Incorporating accessibility features such as wheelchair ramps, braille signage, and inclusive restroom facilities.
Now, this one feels much better. It directly addresses equal access, particularly for disability, which is explicitly listed.
Uh-huh. Wheelchair ramps, braille, inclusive restrooms. These are concrete examples of removing barriers.
And it aligns perfectly with both ADA and California's own Title 24 accessibility standards. Remember, knowledge statements K-29 and K-30 on the KS list? This is right in that wheelhouse.
So B looks like a very strong contender.
It does. Let's check the others, though. Option C, designing the facility to highlight local traditions and holidays that are most popular within the community's dominant cultural group.
That sounds nice on the surface, maybe. Community focus.
But think back to diverse local community. Highlighting only the dominant group's traditions could easily make other groups feel excluded.
Right. It implicitly discriminates by omission, almost. Doesn't quite hit the equal access for all mark for a diverse state-funded center.
Precisely. It fails the non-discrimination test for everyone in that diverse community. So C is not the right approach.
Okay. Last one. Option D. Incorporating accessibility features at key locations most commonly used by visitors, while minimizing such features in less frequently accessed areas to preserve design aesthetics.
Ah, the classic accessibility versus aesthetics trap. Minimizing accessibility features anywhere. That's a huge red flag.
Yeah, equal access means access to all areas, not just the key locations.
Exactly. Title 24 and ADA don't really allow for prioritizing aesthetics over required access in public facilities. It creates tiers of access, which is discriminatory.
So D is definitely out too. Which brings us back to B.
Yes. Option B is the only one that proactively addresses equal access and non-discrimination in a way that's consistent with California law and the project's goal of serving a diverse public.
And it directly connects to knowing those crucial accessibility codes, K-29 and K-30, under the schematic design umbrella.
Absolutely. It's about applying that code knowledge to ensure equitable design.
Great. Let's move to question four then. Again, reading it verbatim. You are the architect overseeing the design and construction of a new commercial building in California. The building has a total floor area of 12,000 square feet. The owner is particularly concerned about the building's performance in terms of energy efficiency, indoor air quality, and overall system functionality. Given the size and requirements of the project, what additional process must be included in the design and construction phases to ensure that the building systems and components meet the owner's project requirements?
Okay, key words here. Architect overseeing, new commercial building, California, the size 12,000 square feet, and the owner's specific concerns. Energy efficiency, indoor air quality, overall system functionality.
And the question asks for an additional process during design and construction to ensure these systems meet the owner's project requirements.
Right. So what are the options?
A, environmental impact assessment.
B,
historical significance evaluation. C, A, building commissioning. D, structural integrity testing.
Okay, let's break them down. Option A, environmental impact assessment. That sounds more like CEQA, right? Early stages.
Yeah, schematic design phase, maybe.
Yeah.
Does it guarantee the systems work efficiently later?
Yeah.
Probably not directly.
Agreed. It's about predicting impact, not verifying performance post-construction to meet owner needs like energy use and IAQ. So A is likely not the additional process they're looking for here.
Option B, historical significance evaluation.
That's easy. It's a new commercial building. History isn't the issue here. Performance is. B is irrelevant.
Definitely. Okay, C, building commissioning.
Ah, commissioning. Now that sounds relevant. It's a process specifically designed to verify that systems are installed correctly and operate as intended.
Right. It directly targets whether the HVAC delivers the right air quality, if the lighting and envelope meet energy goals, if everything functions together. Exactly the owner's concerns.
And remember, Kale Green. Title 24, Part 11. For commercial buildings over 10,000 SQFT, certain commissioning is often required in California precisely to ensure energy efficiency and system performance. This fits the building size and owner's requirements perfectly. Links to K28, Kale Green Knowledge.
Okay, so C is looking very promising. Let's just check D. Structural integrity testing.
Important, absolutely essential for safety, especially seismic in California. But does it address energy efficiency or indoor air quality?
No, not directly. It's about the bones of the building, not the lungs or the metabolism, so to speak. It doesn't cover the owner's specific performance criteria.
Exactly. So structural testing is crucial, but it's not the additional process asked for to ensure these specific performance outcomes.
Which makes C, building commissioning, the clear answer.
Yes. It's the quality assurance process that verifies the energy, air quality, and functionality requirements are met, aligning with owner needs and potentially Feel Green requirements, fitting into that design development phase knowledge.
Makes perfect sense. Okay, final one for this deep dive. Question 5. What is the practice of architecture, according to the California Business and Professions Code?
Straight definition question. Keywords, practice of architecture, and the specific source. California Business and Professions Code. This means we need the legally precise definition.
All right. Option A. Offering, performing, or being in responsible control of professional services which require the skills of an architect in the planning of sites and the design, in whole or in part, of buildings or groups of buildings.
Okay, that sounds pretty comprehensive. Offering, performing, responsible control covers site planning, building design. It feels legally robust.
Yeah, it touches on the key actions and responsibilities outlined in the Architects Practice Act, which is part of the Business and Professions Code. Ties into K1 on the list, understanding that act.
Let's hold on to A, option B. Being in responsible control of professional services which require the skills of an architect in the planning of sites and the design, in whole or in part, of buildings.
It's similar to A, but it's missing the offering and performing parts.
Right. Responsible control is vital, but practice starts before that, right? With offering your services, actually doing the design work, A seems more complete.
So B is maybe too narrow. Option C. Offering or performing architecture by any individual who creates designs for buildings, regardless of whether they are licensed or not, as long as they design structures up to 2 stories in height and a basement.
Whoa, red flags everywhere there. Regardless of whether they are licensed or not. That fundamentally contradicts the Architects Practice Act.
Yeah, the whole point of the act is licensure defines who can legally practice architecture with very specific limited exemptions. This option misrepresents that entirely.
Absolutely. The height and basement thing might vaguely relate to exemptions from needing an architect for certain conventional structures, but it completely mangles the definition of the practice itself and the licensure requirement. C is definitely wrong.
Okay. Option D. The practice of architecture is the act of constructing buildings and infrastructure, including the management of construction sites.
That sounds like a contractor's job description, doesn't it?
Exactly. Construction site management, that's the builder's role.
Yeah.
Architects design and oversee. They don't typically construct. This confuses the roles.
Right. It mixes up design services with construction execution. So D is incorrect as the definition of architectural practice.
Which leads us back again to option A.
Yes. Option A accurately captures the breadth of the legal definition found in the California Business and Professions Code, covering the offering, performing, and responsible control aspects of architectural services. It directly reflects the scope defined by the Architects Practice Act.
And understanding that definition is fundamental, touching on that contract development and project planning area, knowledge statement K1.
Precisely. It's the foundation of your legal right and responsibility to practice.
Well, going through these questions in such detail, focusing on keywords, elimination, justification, it really highlights a solid study strategy.
It really does. It's not about rote memorization. It's about critical thinking and applying your knowledge of the codes and regulations, ADA, Title 24, CL Green, the Practice Act, to specific scenarios.
And you, the listener, can use this same approach. Take a practice question, break it down, identify the core issue, evaluate each option against your knowledge base, and really understand why the correct answer is right and the others are wrong.
Yeah, apply this method to the other materials you have. The webinar content, the full KS list, those AIA prep docs. Engage with it actively. Don't just passively read.
So here's something to think about as you continue studying. How does truly understanding this structure, the exam content areas, the knowledge statements, and this method of dissecting questions change how you approach your study plan? How does it make you feel more strategic, maybe more confident about tackling the CSE?